Hey, this is Dave DeCamp from AntiWar.com. This is AntiWar News for Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Right, the first story at the top of antiwar.com today, the U.S. secretly armed Ukraine with ATACMS. So the U.S. confirmed on Wednesday that it had secretly sent Ukraine long-range army tactical missile systems, known as ATACMS, and they sent these last month as part of a $300 million weapons package that was announced. They did not announce that they sent the ATACMS, but they confirmed it. And the long-range ATACMS, these are the missiles that can be fired from the HIMARS rocket systems, which the U.S. has been started giving Ukraine back in 2022. Most of the ammunition that Ukraine gets for those HIMARS can hit targets up to 50 miles away. These long-range ATACMS can hit targets up to 190 miles away. So it's a very big escalation in U.S. support for Ukraine. And last year, the U.S. secretly shipped an older variant of the ATACM, which is actually a cluster bomb variant. So they gave them, and those had a range of about 100 miles. So that was still, you know, an escalation in itself. But and the fact that it's cluster bombs, for those who don't know, they basically what they do is they spread these small submunitions over a large area, and many of them don't explode, and they're banned in over 100 countries because of that, and they're notorious for killing and maiming civilians. So sending Ukraine cluster bombs with 100-mile range is a pretty crazy thing to do. But now here is the next escalation that we were suspecting would happen. But it has already happened. And a Biden administration official said that Ukraine has actually already used the longer-range ATACMS at least twice, including in an attack on a Russian base in Crimea. And of course, U.S.-supported attacks on Crimea or on the Russian mainland always risk a major escalation from Moscow. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said that a significant number of the ATACMS have been sent to Ukraine, but he would not specify how many. He said that more were on the way as part of a $1 billion arms package that President Biden approved on Wednesday, and we will get more into that in the next story. But the Pentagon did not list them when they announced this package. So they did it secretly, you know, under the table, and now they are officially announcing it. And I'll get into the more about the Ukraine aid in the next story. So, but the Kremlin responded to the fact that that $95 billion bill included a provision that said Ukraine will get their ATACMS. And in response to that, Russia sort of restated something that they have said throughout this war. They say, you know, in response to the U.S. to NATO sending longer range weapons, we're just going to take more Ukrainian territory to counteract it, to create a buffer zone, as they call it. So that's what the Kremlin kind of reaffirmed that when this was in the news again. All right, so the next one here, the Pentagon announces a $1 billion arms package for Ukraine. So this is a nice big weapons package for Ukraine, and this was announced pretty much immediately after Biden signed the $95 billion bill into law. And this includes all sorts of weapons. I mean, air defenses, artillery rounds, anti-tank weapons, armored vehicles, more cluster bombs in the artillery, the 155-millimeter artillery shell version, which the U.S. started sending cluster bombs to Ukraine last year. It was a huge scandal, really. Biden bypassed U.S. law, claiming that forbid the, you know, exporting cluster bombs by claiming it was in the U.S. national security interest somehow to dump cluster bombs into a war, a proxy war with the world's largest nuclear armed power. Somehow that's in the U.S. national security interest. But so I think it's still a big deal that, you know, we should, you know, kind of make a big deal about it when they're still sending them. So I'll just read off. I mean, this will really give you an idea, even if you don't know what a lot of this stuff is. the idea of how many weapons they're sending over. So it includes RIM-7 and AIM-9M missiles for air defense, Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, small arms and additional rounds of small arms ammunition, HIMARS ammunition, 155mm artillery rounds, including the cluster bombs, 105mm artillery rounds, 60mm mortar rounds, Bradley fighting vehicles, mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles, high-mobility multi-purpose wheeled vehicles, logistics support vehicles, tactical vehicles, TOW missiles, Javelin, and AT-4 anti-tank systems, precision aerial munitions, airfield support equipment, anti-armor mines, Claymore anti-personnel munitions, demolition munitions, night vision devices, and spare parts, field equipment, training munitions, and all things like that. So this is what we expected was like, to say, we have this money now, so let's get this thing going here. You know, let's make sure that this war will continue. And, you know, the big point here is, you know, that I always make in these articles that I write up about the situation in Ukraine now, is that it's pretty much known that Ukraine has no chance of winning the war by the way that they define victory, which is kicking Russia out. Nobody thinks they're going to be able to turn the tide right now and really launch like a counteroffensive, because Russia is kind of just steadily making gains. All this ensures is that the war will continue and more people, more Ukrainians, will be killed. And I just put some figures in here about the spending, the total U.S. spending on this war. The new $61 billion that's included in the $95 billion, that brings total spending on the proxy war, which also includes economic aid and money for the Pentagon. It brings the total to about $186 billion in just over 2 years. All right. So the next one here is about Biden signing this bill into law. And you'll never, he just said the most ridiculous thing as he signed this thing into law. He said that it was a good day for world peace. That's what he said when he signed a bill into law that includes all this money to fuel this proxy war with Russia, all this money to support Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, and money to prepare for the next big disaster with China over in the Asia Pacific. Biden said, quote, "It's a good day for America, it's a good day for Europe, and it's a good day for world peace. For real, this is consequential," end quote. I just put in a little background about how this thing passed through the Senate so easily. So, of course, this is a big bipartisan effort, and Biden thanked Republican leaders for supporting the legislation. He said, quote, "I want to thank everyone in Congress who made it possible, especially the bipartisan leadership, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, Leader Jeffries, Leaders Schumer and McConnell. They don't always agree, but when it matters most, they stepped up and did the right thing," end quote. So this is what matters the most to Joe Biden. And Biden claimed, I tried to look this up. He claimed that there was reports of Ukrainian soldiers cheering in the trenches of eastern Ukraine when the aid was approved by the House. I didn't personally see those reports, and I couldn't find them. But after Biden signed the bill into law, the Pentagon announced the new aid for Ukraine. And Biden reaffirmed strong support for Israel for their slaughter in Gaza, which has killed over 34,000 Palestinians, including over 14,000 children since October 7th. He said, quote, "My commitment to Israel, I want to make clear again, is ironclad. The security of Israel is critical," end quote. So I want to take, kind of use that to pitch our fundraiser, because we're trying to raise money at antiwar.com. And I think this really shows, what we're up against. No matter how bad the situation seems, we'll always be here providing this critical coverage, news coverage, and analysis of U.S. wars, U.S. foreign policy, the U.S. empire. And so if you go to antiwar.com/donate, you could see the different ways that you could support us with your credit card, PayPal, cryptocurrency. You could set up monthly donations, recurring. So please help us out. This is how we get by. We are entirely reliant on our readers and now the listeners of this show. So if you appreciate this show and my work, this is how it's done. You know, it's tough to ask people for money and do fundraisers like this, but it's what we got to do. So if you could help us out and, you know, we could get this thing done quickly so we could focus on our work. Antiwar.com/donate. All right. So the next one here, Biden signs TikTok ban, but campaign will remain on platform. So this article is from Kyle at the Libertarian Institute. And so the TikTok ban was part of that big bill. The same day that Biden signed a massive foreign military aid bill that includes a provision to ban TikTok for U.S. users, the president's re-election campaign says that it said that it will remain on the platform through this year's election. So it is kind of convenient. And when it comes to the TikTok ban, yesterday I think I said that ByteDance had a year to divest, but apparently the deadline is ByteDance, which is the company that's based in China that is the parent company of TikTok. They have 9 months to divest, to sell off their ownership of the company. And then if they start doing it, then they get like an extra 3 months to complete it. So that's like it could be a total of a year. But conveniently for President Biden, this ban wouldn't have to happen until after the election. So in the meantime, they're going to use TikTok, this app that they're trying to ban or trying to force the sale of, you know, for campaigning and fundraising. So a Biden campaign official told NBC News, quote, "A fragmented media environment requires us to show up and meet voters where they are, and that includes online. TikTok is one of many places where making sure our content is being seen by voters," end quote. So the account is at Biden HQ. It has more than 300,000 followers. And I made the mistake of looking at it, and it's just really, I mean, the campaign stuff, it's just so, the fact that people are out there campaigning for Biden and making social media content, it's just very, very depressing to see. But they're going to stay on it, and TikTok is saying they're going to fight it. You know, I think they might have a good chance in the legal realm of fighting this thing. And, you know, this will set a very dangerous precedent if the U.S. can, if the U.S. government can ban TikTok. And as I said before, this is, I think, would just be kind of the first example of this overreach that we're going to see from this new Cold War with China. All right. So the next one here, Netanyahu wants a crackdown on protesters in the U.S. So Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday called for a crackdown on Americans protesting against Israel's slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza at college campuses across the United States. Netanyahu put out the statement in English, so it's meant for us. He said, quote, "What's happening in America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities," end quote. So his comments echoed President Biden, who labeled these demonstrations anti-Semitic protests. So at some American universities, police have arrested and dispersed protesters, but Netanyahu said that more should be done. He said, quote, "Now, fortunately, state, local, federal officials, many of them have responded differently, but there has to be more. More has to be done," end quote. This is the Israeli Prime Minister saying that the U.S. should take action against protesters, against their First Amendment right. And this isn't really anything new. You know, you have the Israeli government really lobbied for the anti-BDS laws and things like that, that are at the state level. Yair Lapid, who's the leader of the opposition in Israel and former prime minister, he also called for a crackdown on the protests. He said, quote, "What's happening on American college campuses is unforgivable. It is anti-Semitism. It is support for terrorism. It is support for Hamas, which murders LGBT people and oppresses women. The administration cannot stand by. It has to intervene," end quote. So a member of the Israeli Knesset, the opposition leader, says that Biden's got to take action against these protesters. I mean, imagine another country saying this, you know? So Texas state troopers, there's a lot going on. I haven't been able to keep track of all the different protests at all the different universities, but I saw in Texas State troopers broke up protests at Texas University in Austin, and at least 10 people were arrested. 10 students were arrested. I saw videos of, looked like a lot of people getting taken away. And, you know, I saw the governor, what's his name, Greg Abbott, like cheering them on and saying, oh, you know, they have to be taken, broken up and everything. So one demand of those protesters at Texas University was for the university to divest from manufacturing companies that supply weapons to the Israeli military. So we've seen Biden and other Israel supporters in the U.S., they're labeling these demonstrations as anti-Semitic, even though many Jewish students are involved. And I linked to, including at the protest at Columbia University, I just saw before I started recording an interview on Breaking Points, or it's the whatever Ryan Grimm's show is called on Breaking Points. He interviewed a Jewish student who was who's at the encampment in Columbia about how she set up a Passover Seder and that they did it in the camp. So, I mean, is that an anti-Semitic protest? I mean, it's just completely ridiculous. But that's the narrative. So where am I here? So Netanyahu really took things a step further. Instead of just calling them anti-Semitic, he claimed that the protesters want to kill Jews wherever they are. So that's what Netanyahu came out and said. And again, these are people, what they're doing is protesting this genocidal slaughter that he is leading. All right, so the next one here, Israel is violating international law and humanitarian law with U.S. weapons. So this is from Middle East Eye, this article. So an independent U.S. task force has informed the Biden administration that there is compelling and credible evidence that Israel's use of American weapons violates a U.S. national security memorandum demanding U.S. arms be used in accordance with humanitarian law. The report, viewed by Middle East Eye, was submitted to the U.S. government on the 19th of April. So this is interesting. These are former U.S. government officials, and I believe it was led by this guy. What's his name? Is it Jake Paul? Josh Paul. And he's a State Department official who resigned like right away in October, very outspoken. So what they're doing here is they did this report because the State Department, the U.S., the Biden administration claimed they had this new national security memorandum that required countries they give weapons to agree that they won't violate international law, American, you know, U.S. humanitarian laws when they use U.S. weapons. And the U.S., Israel gave them those assurances, and the U.S. said, yeah, you know, there's no evidence that they're violating international law, which is just completely crazy. You know, anybody that has been paying attention to what's going on knows, you know, about the huge civilian casualties and everything. So they did this report, and, you know, again, there is a lot of evidence. So these are former U.S. officials, and they submitted it. So maybe this will have some kind of impact. And I know within the State Department, there's a lot of people unhappy with what's happening at the lower levels, and not necessarily at the lower levels, at people that are not political appointees but are kind of career State Department officials. That's what this Josh Paul guy was. I believe he was in for a while, like over 10 years throughout administrations. So, you know, maybe this could help move the needle or something. I don't know. Hopefully. All right, so the next one here, mass graves at Gaza's Nasser Hospital, what you need to know. This article is from Al Jazeera, just an update on the mass graves that they found in Khan Yunis at the Nasser Medical Complex. And now it's more than 300 bodies that have been recovered. That's really just the update that they continue to find bodies. Israel, of course, is denying that they, I don't know, they're just denying the whole thing, I guess. And so Gaza's civil defense crews said that more than 300 bodies have been recovered from the mass grave at Nasser Medical Complex so far. And those being retrieved from the grave included women, children, patients, and medical staff. This is a reporter for Al Jazeera who said medical staff and evacuees who had managed to leave the hospital before the Israeli army's withdrawal had described scenes of horror, mass killings, and arrests to the point the entire hospital turned from a place of healing into a massive graveyard. I know that in the Israel defenders online are saying that the Palestinians buried some people at temporary graves before they left. But then there was the civil defense group. This is what they're talking about. On Monday said that it uncovered many of the bodies from what appear to be temporary graves inside the Nasser complex as Israel's siege prevented access to cemeteries. But Israel also buried more bodies, and they exhumed bodies that were there. They said that they were looking for hostages. I know that they've done that in other parts of Gaza where they dig up the dead Palestinians. So just a really horrific situation. All right, so the next one here. China says that U.S. aid for Taiwan makes war more likely. So China on Wednesday denounced new U.S. military aid for Taiwan that's included in a massive $95 billion foreign aid bill President Biden has signed into law, warning that it will make a conflict more likely. So this is Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin. He said, quote, "I would like to stress that getting closer militarily between the United States and the Taiwan region will not make the latter safer or save Taiwan independence from doom. It will only heighten tensions and the risk of conflict and confrontation in the Taiwan Strait and will eventually backfire," end quote. This has been China's message for the past few years as the U.S. has been increasing military and diplomatic support for Taiwan. China's Taiwan Affairs Office also condemned the new U.S. aid for Taiwan. A spokeswoman for the office said, quote, "It sends a wrong signal to the Taiwan separatist forces. We urge the U.S. side to fulfill its commitment not to support Taiwan independence with concrete actions and stop arming Taiwan in any way," end quote. So over in Taiwan, Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen said that she was very happy that Congress passed the legislation, and Taiwanese President-elect William Lai, who's the current vice president, he also celebrated this new aid. China also went after the Democratic Progressive Party, the Tsai and Lai's party, saying that it's, quote, "willing to become a pawn for external forces to use Taiwan to contain China, bringing Taiwan into a dangerous situation," end quote. So $8 billion was included for the Taiwan and Asia spending. It includes $1.9 billion to replenish weapons sent to Taiwan and $2 billion in foreign military financing in money for them to buy weapons. And it says that it's for Taiwan and other countries in the region. So it's not clear exactly how much Taiwan will get. I have a feeling they're probably going to get most, or if not all of it. I know they're trying to give more military aid to the Philippines too. And then there's $3.3 billion for submarine infrastructure in the region. And this is very provocative. It's a big deal. The U.S. just started giving military aid to Taiwan last year. They've sold them weapons for decades, but they just started, you know, military aid is a new thing. And you see the Chinese officials are constantly warning that this stuff is going to lead to a very bad situation. But the U.S. continues to ignore the warnings. One thing you always see the Chinese officials say, you see President Xi always say, if he ever talks to Biden, they call Taiwan the first red line that must not be crossed in U.S.-China relations. But the U.S. continues to push it. All right, so the next one here, Israeli defense minister claims that half of Hezbollah commanders have been killed. So Israeli defense minister Yoav Gallant spoke to the Northern Command, reporting that Israel was actively carrying out offensive action against targets across southern Lebanon. This article is by Jason Ditz, by the way. Gallant claimed that Israel had killed fully half of all Hezbollah commanders in the south. He bragged that the other half are now in hiding, though he later clarified to the press that he was only referring to brigade-level commanders. And even that claim is dubious, according to the Jerusalem Post, which says it isn't clear how many brigade commanders there were in the first place, and that sources put the number around 15. Israeli reports put the number of commanders killed at 6, which is short of half. So there was more more strikes across the border between the two sides. So this thing continues, and some of the Israeli missile strikes destroyed a civilian home. Some of the latest strikes killed a woman and her 11-year-old niece. 6 other civilians were ultimately recovered from the rubble of the destroyed house. So they have killed a lot of civilians. I believe they've killed over 300 people, and a decent amount. I'm not sure exactly the ratio there, but there has been a lot of reports of civilians being killed. All right, so the last story here. The U.S. military says that no final decision on Niger withdrawal has been made. So this is really something. The U.S. is still trying to stay in Niger. So a top U.S. military official told the Associated Press that the U.S. has still made no final decision on withdrawing from Niger, despite the State Department saying that it had agreed to the Nigerian government's request to leave. The official said that the U.S. also hasn't decided to leave Chad, where the government is threatening to scrap the deal that justifies the U.S. presence in the country. So this is Joint Chiefs Vice Chairman Admiral Christopher Grady. He is the second highest ranking military officer. He said, quote, "We are all trying to establish ourselves as the partner of choice. It's up to us to establish why we think our partnership with them is important. We certainly want to be there. We want to help them. We want to empower them. We want to do things by, with, and through them," end quote. So, you know, and the language there saying that they're the partner of choice, that's referring to Russia, because Russia, Niger, and other African countries are forging stronger ties with Russia as they've been expelling the Western forces. So we had Kurt Campbell, the Deputy Secretary of State. He said this past Friday that the U.S. had agreed to Niger's request for a withdrawal and that the U.S. would begin discussions with officials in Niger on how to carry it out. But Grady claimed that there were discussions ongoing on a potential new military agreement. There's no sign from Niger that that's happening or that they want the U.S. to stay. I mean, I think he's just lying here. Grady said, quote, "There's still negotiations underway. I don't believe there's a final decision on disposition of U.S. forces there," end quote. Which, again, I think he's just either lying or just completely wrong. And we know why the U.S. wants to stay. They have that big drone base there. It's a hub for U.S. military operations in the Sahel region in Africa. And, you know, we recently just had this whistleblower, a senior Air Force leader, saying that the U.S. refusal to leave Niger was putting U.S. troops in danger. And one thing that he said was that U.S. officials were suppressing intelligence to maintain a facade of good relations between the U.S. and Niger. So is that what Grady's doing here? Is he just continuing to do the same thing? You know, it's really something. They're still trying to stay. And I think this really does put the U.S. troops that are there in danger, keeping them in a country that does not want them there. And you know, tying in the Russia stuff, the thing that made Niger say, all right, we're done here. We're going to end our military partnership with the U.S., scrap the agreement that justifies the legal reasoning for the U.S. presence, was because during a meeting in March between U.S. and Nigerian officials, the U.S. was lecturing them about their relationship with Russia, and they said, you're trying to violate our sovereignty, so you got to get out. So, you know, to see kind of even him still have that rhetoric about why we're the partners of choice, why we should be the partner of choice, it still seems to be about that. All right, so that is it for the news for today. Please go check out our viewpoints. One from Brett Wilkins: report, alarm over growing role of big tech in U.S. military industrial complex. One from Thomas Knapp: U.S. foreign policy, no daylight is where peace dies in darkness. One from Kit Clarenberg: meet Centuria, Ukraine's Western-trained neo-Nazi army. One from Judge Napolitano: killing the Constitution. And our spotlight is from Connor O'Keefe at the Mises Institute: cowardice, not courage, led House Republicans to side with the Democrats. So please go check all that out. Go check out our blog. We repost the Ron Paul Liberty Report, Kyle Anzalone's great show, Conflicts of Interest, and some other blog posts there. So please, again, if you can help us with our fundraiser, antiwar.com/donate. If not, you could help us out in other ways by sharing this show. Tell your friends about antiwar.com. Like, subscribe, comment, reviews, all that stuff. Follow us on Instagram, on Twitter. But I will be back tomorrow with some more news. Thanks for listening.